are Locked On Brewers, your daily Milwaukee Brewers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, and welcome back to Locked On Brewers, brought to you by the Locked On Podcast Network, where we talk about your favorite teams every day. I'm your host, Jake Mastriani, and you can follow me on Twitter at shortstopball. And also joining me is my co-host, Vinny Rotino, and you can follow him on Twitter as well at Vinny Rotino. Also, make sure you follow the podcast on Twitter at Locked On Brewers and subscribe to the Locked On Brewers podcast wherever you get your podcast. In today's episode, we'll be getting to the latest news. Had a good bit of news on Thursday. We'll recap the game on Thursday and the Cardinals series in general. I'll give you my farm report for the week, looking to see who is hot down on the farm, and then we'll preview the weekend series against the Braves. Before we get into all of that, I'll remind you this episode is brought to you by Locker Room. Download the Locker Room app and join me next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Central during the Royals-Brewers game to get in on the action. A Locker Room, changing the way we talk sports. So before we get into the game action, was a good bit of transactional news happening on Thursday. You had Josh Lindblom and Omar Narvaez reinstated before the game on Thursday, and the corresponding moves were Luke Maley and Patrick Weigel being optioned back to Nashville. Also, Jacob Nottingham was DFA'd again, so he'll go through that process for the third time already this year. Hopefully the Brewers will be able to retain him. And Zach Golley chose not to elect free agency, and he was outrighted to Nashville, so good to see the Brewers got to keep him around. And then obviously Corbin Burnes was reinstated to make the start on Thursday. But Vinny, the biggest news of the day by far is Christian Yelich. We finally heard something on him, and he will be starting a rehab assignment over the weekend in Nashville. And then the Brewers will reassess the situation after the weekend. So that's certainly great. We're going to get to see him back on the field. But Vinny, I'm still hesitant. I'm still concerned. I talked about this on the Locker Room app with Matt Millard. That back issue, and you can kind of tell it by the way counsel addressed it. You know, they're not going to put a timetable on his return. They're just going to, I think what he basically said was they're just going to try to get through the weekend. And I just get the feeling with this back issue with Yelich, it's really day to day. Like, you never know if he's going to wake up and it's going to be bothering him or not. And I think that's just, we've talked about before, I think that's something he's going to deal with for probably the rest of his career.
We don't know what's going on with him. Is it spasms? Well, that's a little bit what's frustrating about this whole situation. Is it spasms? Is it a strain? I mean, give us some information so that we can maybe feel a little bit better if it is a strain, because strains heal. It's like a pulled muscle, right? But if it's spasms or something like structural, so they did an MRI, so it's nothing like disc related, I don't think, but there's no information out there. So I'm with you. It's like we're kind of in the dark and we're kind of guessing. The only thing that is encouraging is that he feels good enough to have a rehab assignment. Whereas before, you could see in the games when he came back in Philly that there was a ball in the corner and he was barely jogging after him. Like, this guy does not look right still. And so that's the only thing that was concerning to me. So the fact that he's going to go and play a rehab game in AAA, that's encouraging to me from the standpoint of he feels and look, it seems as if he would feel much better in order to put himself into that situation. I don't know. It's just, it feels a little bit better. Whereas before, it feels like, oh, the team's struggling. I need to get back in the lineup. There's no minor league baseball anyway, so let me just get back in there. And I think he went out and got like two hits against Philly that night. But that's what it felt like before. Like, it was almost like a desperate move to get back in the lineup. Whereas this is like, okay, I'm going to actually play, get a couple of bats in Nashville, take it slow. That feels a little bit better as, you know, as a guy commenting on this situation. That feels better to me. I don't know about you.
Yeah. Now, I'm still worried about it just from the tone of counsel and the way things have played out. I'm more worried that this is just going to be something that continues to flare up on him and pop up again. So I'm still a little pessimistic about it, but again, like you said, it is a good thing. He's at least feeling at a point where, you know, he's ready to go back out there and play, get some at bats in. and see how it responds. You know, it's just he's so important to this team. You know, just his presence and being there, he's so important to this team. You know, obviously I want him back. I want him in the middle of that lineup, but I can't help but be, you know, a little cautious with the way things have gone this year. And then trying to bring him back. I am glad, like you said, they're not rushing him this time, saying, oh, you know, there's no minor league season, let's just bring him up. They're slow playing it a little bit, going to give him time in the minors to see how it responds. And then, like they said, kind of reassess the situation. So, I mean, but thinking positively, the Brewers could have their MVP back in the middle of the order, you know, by the beginning of next week. So that's certainly, you know, a potential positive. I guess I'm just holding back reservations right now until it actually happens and he comes out of this weekend, fingers crossed, hopefully healthy. So big news.
Smart to be a little cautious with your optimism. You're probably right to think that because, yeah, he is so important. So I agree with you on that front. So,
yeah, especially with the way the offense is going. They need him back, but they need him back as Christian Yelich. So hopefully we get that as soon as next week, if possible. And then finally, just another little piece of news. They announced they're going back to full capacity at American Family Field starting on June 25th. So the end of next month. So that's some great news there as well. Going to be getting back to more sense of normal at the ballpark. So great to hear that. So now let's quickly go through Thursday's game, and honestly, not a ton to talk about here. Another great pitching matchup in this series, as we thought it would be, with Flaherty going against Burns. There was some understandable rust for Corbin Burns in that first inning. He gave up a leadoff single to Tommy Edman, then Edman stole second, and Arenado brought him in later on a single. Next hitter got a single as well. I think Matt Carpenter and Arenado was thrown out at home, cut down that run. One of two people thrown out at the plate today. The defense was excellent for the Brewers in this game. But after that, Burns was his normal self, just mowing down hitters. I think he allowed a couple of, you know, singles after that. And then he did a walk a batter, which is some of the bigger news from the game. Benny, he ended the streak there of striking out without walking anybody. Just to put that into context, he made history striking out 52 batters without walking anyone to begin a season, which was a record. And then he also broke the streak for the longest stretch of strikeouts without a walk, or at least since 1893. So, and that's 18-1-8. So, Vinny, the streak comes to the end for Burns, but still just unbelievable in this game.
He's brutal. I can't believe he walked a guy.
Exactly. I mean, get rid of this clown.
Yeah. Send him down. No. You know, I joke, and it's like, so I guess he is human. And then the gods kind of look around and be like, nah, he's still one of us, right? He's right. Like 59 punch outs and one walk. Yeah. Baseball gods, I'm saying. You know, so it's like, wow, it's an incredible run. It still is an incredible run. I mean, he set a major league record. Is absolutely unbelievable. I can't believe how good this guy has gotten in the matter of 2 years. And he's still only, he's young still, 25, I think. So, I don't know, man. It's almost, he leaves you speechless a little bit. I mean, it's 97 mile an hour sliders, basically, at times that cutter, what that looks like. And then he's got a 90 mile an hour slider. It's, the stuff is just, it's the best stuff in the big leagues. I mean, you watch Garrett Cole and how nasty his stuff is, and that's similar velocity, similar slider. He might have a little bit tighter slider that tunnels and with more break and tunnels just as well, or maybe even a little bit better. It looks like a fastball at hand, but Burns has that. He's got multiple pitches. He's got variations of the breaking ball, and he's got a changeup to go with it that's developing. So, I mean, he's commanding a backdoor cutter at 97. So that's I just am speechless. I'm watching. It's almost like old hat when he punches out nine and walks zero or one batter like he did today. So it was incredible, just incredible.
Yeah. And he took back over the ERA lead on the team from Brandon Woodruff. Burns is now at 1.57, and Woodruff is way up there at 1.64. So, I mean, it's just absolutely incredible what those two have done in this rotation for the Milwaukee Brewers. And there's Eric Lauer at 138. So again, don't want to forget that either. He had some big moments there for the Brewers. But yeah, what Burns and Woodruff have done, and Peralta as well, he's at 277, which is not too bad either. But he does come out after the fifth at 78 pitches, which is about where I thought, you know, they would cap him, you know, around 80 pitches or so, you know, even with him being able to stay in shape and work out and not exactly having the symptoms of COVID, still just taking 2 weeks off. Wouldn't expect him to go very deep into this one. Going to the offensive side of things, which is just honestly depressing at this point. I don't know what other way to say it. Again, you know, what we were talking before he came on, but he just sounded like a kind of a broken record at this point. It's almost like deja vu on the podcast every day we get on here. And great pitching, offense struggles to get a hit with runners in scoring position. I mean, it's been the same thing for 2 weeks now. You run through it. The Brewers got a leadoff double in the second as Dylan Carlson struggled to find the ball going from the sun to the shadows and allowed Shaw to get the second for a double, but he never moved off second base. And again, just continues to infuriate me. They get a leadoff single from Arias in the third, and then Burns sacrificed him over, so you got a little bit of small ball there. But then the top two hitters in your lineup, Wong and Kane, both strike out, which they're going against Jack Flaherty, very good pitcher in his own right. So, you know, don't want to fault them there, but those are guys that I expect to put the ball in play, you know, no matter who they're going up against. Then they had a leadoff walk from Daniel Vogelbach in the fourth, and then a two-out walk by Omar Narvaez, but then JBJ grounded out to end that threat. And then the fifth, they got a one-out pinch hit single from McKinney. But again, top of the order couldn't get it done there either. They got another leadoff double in the sixth, this time from Vogelbach. But like Shaw earlier in the game, he just hung out on second base for the rest of the inning. And then finally, the Cardinals tacked on another one in the top of the ninth, thanks to a throwing error by Perdomo, which made it 2-0. But again, the Brewers got runners on base in the bottom of the ninth. They got two on, but that they had a they got two runners on, but that was surrounded by three strikeouts in the inning. Both teams struck out 11 times in this game, but the Cardinals had 8 hits and 8 walks to the Brewers, 5 hits and 4 walks. We'll get into more of the takeaways from this game next. Before we do that, let me tell you about betonline.ag. They're the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. And even though the NFL season is over, you got the NBA, NHL, and Major League Baseball seasons all in full swing at the same time. So plenty of opportunities there to get in on the action. But betonline.ag does more than that. They also cover awards, TV shows, and reality TV. They have real-time updated odds and props on almost anything that you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head on over to betonline.ag on your phone or internet browser and sign up today to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit using our promo code LOCKEDON. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. So, Vinny, I want to read through a couple of tweets really quickly from Adam McAlvey of MLB.com. First of which, he tweets out, Corbin Burns has a 1.57 ERA and the most strikeouts per nine at 15.20 of any pitcher in the majors with at least 20 innings. But his record is 2-3, and the Brewers have managed to lose 4 of his 6 starts. He also tweets out the Brewers lost 2 of 3 to St. Louis with the Brewers starters Peralta, Woodruff, Burns, their top three starters going 19 2/3 innings, allowing just 2 runs on 9 hits and 3 walks with 27 strikeouts. But Brewers hitters were 2 for 31 with runners in scoring position in the series. They were over 10 with runners in scoring position on Thursday and 1 for 18 with runners on base. And Council talked about it after the game as far as the runners in scoring position. He said Council chalked it up, those ugly runners in scoring position numbers, as this is how the game of baseball works. They were 1-13. Talking about the Cardinals, they were 1 for 13 with runners in scoring position. It's the team that gets the hits with runners in scoring position is how you score runs. We're in a rut with it. We're not getting it done in those spots right now. So Vinny, with that kind of the preface there going through that, I mean, just what are your thoughts as far as, you know, the pitching being that good, the offense struggling with running scoring position? Again, I know we talk about this on every podcast, but then Council's kind of response to that.
So I have nothing really to say about this at this point because they're struggling. They're pressing. They are, you know, expanding the zone. They're overly aggressive in those situations where It's cliche. It's an old adage. The pressure is on the pitcher in those situations. When it starts to snowball on you, like it obviously has, there's no there's no way to get out of it except just kind of executing a couple of times, and everyone starts to believe that they can score again. That's it. I mean, there's no other recipe, and it's frustrating for all of us to watch. And it's frustrating for the players, and it's frustrating for Council and Andy Haynes and the whole team. I don't think anyone has any answers, especially like what you just said with Council's response to that question. That response is, we're just not getting it done. So he doesn't have any answers either. Christian Yelich would be an answer, right? That would be a definite answer. Like you said, you nailed it. Presence in that lineup creates pressure for the pitcher. That spot is always lurking around the corner. His spot. He's a dangerous bat. You can execute pitches on him, and he's going to hit well executed pitches, which is rare for a hitter. So, they just have to just continue to try and grind through. I mean, I just looked at the numbers. They're third worst according to FanGraphs for offensive WAR. So it's in the league. So I think they're behind. They're ahead of Detroit and Colorado. So that's pretty ugly company to be in for on the offensive side of things. So I don't know. Yeah. One of the times I rarely say this, but I don't know.
Yeah.
But I still believe in these guys. I just think they're in a nasty rut, and the injury stuff has been really kind of wearing on him. I mean, Omar Narvaez not being in the lineup it puts a lot of pressure on other guys. That once you get the pressure put on you, and you're not a guy that's not your role, it makes you come out of who you are as a player. Okay, so like all of a sudden Tyrone Taylor's been great. But I was like, a Billy McKinney starts playing a little too much, gets exposed a little bit, right? So that snowballs on you. And then, I mean, even Avisail, like he's a good player, he's a good hitter. I don't know if he's a lineup anchor, if that makes sense, right? He's not a talent like Christian Yelich. He's just not. He's a good player. He's a solid player. So it just puts a little more pressure on everybody when that happens. And I mean, in what we were seeing out of, so both your best two bats out of lineup, Narvaez and Yelich. So this is going to, it's almost like this is going to happen. And then once it starts to happen, it snowballs on you. So that's my take on it.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to let you go, cause I just feel like I've ranted about this all week now. What I don't agree with is the fact that Council says it's whoever gets that big hit. When you get a leadoff double, you don't have to get a hit to score a run, and that it just continues to happen. They get these runners on second to start an inning, and they just sit there, and he keeps waiting, on that hit, keeps waiting on that home run. This lineup can't do that right now. I'm just sorry. They can't, they're not capable. I shouldn't say they're not capable. It's just not happening right now. You got to get creative, find ways to score runs. So I was going to let you talk because it's going to get my blood boiling if I do, but I did want to get your thought on one other thing too, because I know we've talked about it. I think we talked about it off air. I don't think we've discussed it on the podcast yet, but this idea that the balls are deflated in a sense this year, because one ball in particular in this game off the bat of Omar Narvaez, I thought was gone, thought was going to be a two-run homer, that home run we've been waiting on off Jack Flaherty in the sixth inning. It came off the bat at 106 miles an hour, a launch angle of 35 degrees, an expected batting average of 660, and it dies at the warning track fairly easily at the warning track in center field. Do you think these new baseballs are deadening the home runs a little bit?
Yeah, I think the balls are dead.
Yeah.
I think the balls are dead, and I don't know. Why is that taboo to talk about? I don't understand. Like, it's all like hush hush. I'm not. Why is it? Do you have an answer?
I don't know. I have no idea. But I mean, you see the numbers around the league right now. We're at an all time low at like 234 league average. I mean, and strikeouts are at an alarming rate. So I know they said they were going to change the baseballs because they were hitting too many home runs, and they were. but I feel like it's gone completely too far to the other side.
Let's go conspiracy theory podcast for a second, because I like talking about this. So let's say that the league says, okay, too many strikeouts because guys are trying to launch the ball now, right? They're trying to swing with a launch angle and swing up on the ball. So that therefore there's too many strikeouts. Guys are swinging underneath fastballs, vertical fastball, right? The 97 mile an hour fastball at the top of the zone. Okay. So let's deaden the ball. And then therefore, so now these fly balls are not going to leave the ballpark and they're going to be out. So we're going to promote more of a, like a line drive contact type swing. So that could be happening. I'm just throwing a conspiracy theory out there. I don't know. Anyway, that's for another podcast, another talk, but, I do think that the balls are, I mean, I've seen it. So first game of the year, I think it was, yeah, first game of the year, second game of the year, Orlando Arcia, was it against Berrios? Yes, Berrios. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He crushed a ball to left center. I'm like, that's gone, and died. Didn't even get to the warning track. The ball is elevated a little bit too much, but like, I think it was a launching or a one of those situations. 85% of the time, it's going to be a hit. Well, a hit at that launch angle goes over the fence. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. It's as a fan, it's just like, it feels a little slimy that they may have done that and not told anybody. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely something. I mean, I don't know about your conspiracy theory, but that sounds, you know, somewhat legit. I don't know if it was, like I said, I don't know if it was necessarily intentional. I do think they wanted to bring the home runs down into somewhat a normal level, but I mean, when a guy hits a ball 106 miles an hour at a 35 degree angle, like Narvaez did.
Yeah, that should go out.
That needs to go out. I mean, it just died at the warning track. Like the guy didn't have to leap and rob it. I mean, it died like at the edge of the warning track. So I don't know. And Avisel Garcia hit another ball in this game. The Brewers had four of the five hardest hit balls in this game. They got two doubles out of it and a couple of flyouts on the other two. So I don't know. I know, again, we've discussed some of those conspiracies off air before. So I want to give you a chance to get those in, because I know you love to talk about it. But
I think it's interesting anyway.
Yeah, it definitely seems to be hurting the Brewers. And I'm sure it's hurting other teams as well. Like I said, averages are down across the league right now. So certainly, you know, it's tough for a team that has this offensive philosophy of let's wait on the big hits. Let's wait on the home runs, and the home runs just aren't coming this year. And you know, it could be something to do with the baseballs. So that's certainly frustrating if that's the fact, and all of a sudden things are changing that drastically as they are. Final thing I just wanted to bring up, and I mentioned it earlier, the defense was great in this one. They had two players thrown out at home, and then Vinny Colton Wong made a play behind the second base bag, backhands pretty much going into left field, and gets enough on the ball to throw the runner out at second, or out at first rather. He's been, you know, amazing at second base this year, exactly what we thought he would be. So that's the one thing right now that coming into the year we were expecting was great defensive play, and that has lived up to it. Next, we'll go over a quick farm report, and then we'll preview the weekend series. Before we do that, let me tell you a little bit about our friends at Built Bar. And I tell you about them all the time because it is such a fantastic tasting protein bar. They have a ton of flavors, and it's not just your regular chocolate or cookies and cream or fudge, which again are still some of my favorites. They have a bunch of different flavors, from almond toffee to mint and coconut and peanut butter fudge, dark chocolate raspberry. Just a lot of really different flavors out there, really unique, cool, interesting flavors to try out. Stuff you don't normally get in a protein bar, something that's going to give you a unique taste and taste good as well. They're not hard as a rock, has a soft, chewy middle, makes them very easy to get down. They're tasty, they're great for you, and most of them only have about 5 net carbs. So whether you like to eat them before workout, after workout, as a meal replacement in the morning, or if they're just a snack for you like they are for me, you can eat them anytime. They're packed with protein and not a lot of carbs, so they're a great treat for you to be able to have, and they taste amazing. I can't tell you enough how good they are, especially for a protein bar. So go to builtbar.com today. Try a bunch of different flavors to figure out which ones are your favorites. Go to builtbar.com and use our promo code LOCKEDON15 for 15% off your next order. Go to builtbar.com today and use the promo code LOCKEDON15. So I'm going to go through the farm report really quickly from the past week. At Nashville, first baseman Zach Greene is off to a hot start, hitting .308 with three home runs in the team's first seven games. He's a former third-round pick by the Phillies in 2012, so he is off to a really good start. And then through his first starts, Aaron Ashby, who obviously a lot of Brewers fans are familiar with, he's allowed just one run and three hits with nine strikeouts, but he's also walked nine batters, which is a little concerning. Want to see that command come back a little bit, but been really good through his first two starts otherwise. In Biloxi, Tristan Lutz, another really good prospect, outfield prospect for the Brewers. He's hitting .333 with a couple of home runs in the first week plus here. And then reliever Matt Hardy has 10 strikeouts and 5 1/3 innings for the Shuckers. Down in Wisconsin, or rather up in Wisconsin for me, outfielder LJ Castillo, a 17th round pick by the Brewers in 2017 out of Lancaster, New York. He's hitting .435 on this young season. And there's some really good pitching performances for the Rattlers. You have Francis Adames with 10 strikeouts and 8 innings while only allowing 2 hits. Harold Chirino has 9 strikeouts and 4 2/3 innings without allowing a single hit. And then Reese Olson has 7 strikeouts and 5 innings without allowing a run. Unfortunately, there is no update that I've seen on Garrett Mitchell. I haven't seen him in any of the box scores yet. Haven't seen him in a game. So that's a little concerning. Thought he would be back by now. But we'll keep an eye on that and definitely will update you if I hear something on him. And then in Carolina, more down in my neck of the woods, you got Gabe Holt continues to be the leading hitter for that team. He's batting .308 in 8 games with an .885 OPS. And Brandon Murphy, a 2017 fourth round pick by the Brewers, has allowed just 2 hits in 8 innings with 13 strikeouts for the Mudcats. So that's your farm report for the week. We'll try to do that every Friday, kind of give you an idea of who's hot down there on the farm for the Brewers minor league system. But getting into this weekend series against the Braves, and I cover the Braves as well, as you all know, and they are in much of a funk as the Brewers right now. They just got swept by the Blue Jays and are struggling to score runs. So something's got to give this weekend. Vinny, I know, you know, the Brewers just ran through their top three starters. So, you know, you're going to have Hauser and Anderson going and Peralta, which are still really good. But is the offense going to get going this weekend? That's going to be the big question for the Brewers. If they can get going again, the Braves are struggling to score runs as well. So like Council said, it's who's going to get those hits with runners on base, Vinny.
I think the Brewers are going to, I think, take the series against the Braves just because of, I just think their pitching staff in general is a little stronger and there's going to be some close games. And I think the Brewers have run into some arms that have just been some of the top arms that are emerging in the league. I mean, I know Jack Flaherty's emerged a couple of years ago, but guys like him, guys like so the guys with the Marlins, like Trevor Rogers and Sandy Alcantara. I just think they've had a run of facing some of these dudes that just kind of like, and I know the Braves have arms too. I just think they're not of that caliber. I know Ian Anderson. Who's in the lineup for the Braves coming up here for arms?
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be Drew Smyly on Friday, Ian Anderson on Saturday, and Waskar Ynoa on Sunday.
And Ynoa is kind of an emerging arm as well, right?
Yep.
Smyly. I mean, they got to have a breakout game against Smyly, and that'll set the tone for the series, hopefully, and then go from there. But that's my take on the series.
Yeah, and one thing, too, the Braves bullpen is an absolute mess. They blew another game on Thursday, so the Brewers certainly should have an advantage there. But I think it'll be a good series. I'm not going to predict anything because I think I've been wrong on every prediction so far. So I'm gonna go let Vinny do that because he seems to be better at it than me. But
I don't know about that.
Yeah, hopefully it is a good series and the Brewers can get back on track. That'll do it for this episode of Locked On Brewers. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Locked On Brewers and follow me at Shortstop Ball and Vinny at Vinny Rotino. Also make sure you subscribe to Locked On Brewers podcast wherever you get your podcast, and we'll talk to you next time.
You are Locked On Brewers, your daily Milwaukee Brewers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.